If you want to know what is really happening in the world today, you need to read the Parsha HaShavua, the weekly Torah reading. Join Rabbi Mendel Lipska for the next hour as he delves and enumerates the themes running through the weekly Torah Parsha, only on 101.9 Chai FM.
And wonderful Erev Shabbos to all of you. Great to be here with you. And to spend some time talking about the Parsha, talking about life, and talking about what in fact Torah has to tell us about life. As I always say, Torah is the book of life. It's the gift of God to each and every one of us. And it's something which contains within it the necessary ingredients and information for us to lead a meaningful and purposeful life. And how much more so do we think about these things this week, the week following Shavuot, when we celebrate it, the story of revelation at Sinai, Matan Torah, when God gave the Torah to the Israelites, the Jewish people. And it was a significant moment, not only because of the fact that God himself, so to speak, descended upon the mountain and gave the Torah, the Ten Commandments, to the people, but what preceded Matan Torah. And as our sages explain, what preceded Matan Torah was, on the one hand, Vayichan Yisrael. The Jewish people camped. And it uses the singular to illustrate the fact that there was absolute unity. It was as if these millions of people were like one person with one heart. And this absolute unity, the sense of positive togetherness, was one of the reasons why Matan Torah, giving the Torah, became possible. The other, of course, was a declaration by the people of Na'aseh v'Nishma. We will do and we will study, we will understand. In other words, it was a powerful declaration of absolute commitment to doing the right thing. Whatever commandment, positive or negative, God would give us, we will observe with absolute loyalty. And it's these things, including, of course, the counting of the Omer, the daily preparation for 49 days to get to Sinai, it's these things that brought about a tremendous change within the psyche and preparedness of the Jewish people to receive the Torah. Because giving the Torah was an extraordinary event, God giving us the infinite within a finite dimension. And this is why it needed tremendous preparation on the part of the people. And this is the unity, the absolute commitment and dedication, the effort on a daily basis to refine one's character. All these things brought about the possibility of receiving the Torah. There's Matan Torah, giving the Torah, an act by God. And then there's the receiving the Torah, an act that each and every person developed on his own and her own. But it goes beyond that. We celebrate that great festival in all sorts of ways. We read the Aseret HaDibrot, the Ten Commandments, etc. But the question really is, how do we carry forward that incredible state of being that the Israelites were in before Matan Torah? The unity, the dedication, the daily effort and preparation of character refinement. Yes, we can understand how it led up to Matan Torah. But after Shavuot, after we've gone through that experience, how do we take those incredibly powerful elements and make them our own, particularly in the type of world that we live in? And the answer is not simple, because all too often, tragically, the Israelites did not live up to that commitment. They did not live up to that sense of unity. There was chaos, there was strife, there was a turning away from God. In fact, we'll soon read the story of the golden calf, that terribly disturbing story of the golden calf very soon after Revelation at Sinai. So we all have to ask ourselves, how do we carry forward these incredible, lofty levels that we achieved? It was not something that was not possible. It was something that was done. How can we possibly carry on, so that these elements become so ingrained in our lives that they become second nature. And there are a great many explanations, but one of them is what is contained in the Parsha, the instructions that were given to the Levites in terms of their particular service in the temple. The Kohanim, Aaron and his two sons, had a particular responsibility, the priests. The Leviim, the Levites, also had particular responsibilities. There were three families, Gershon, Kahat, and Merari, and each one had a different job within the temple. And perhaps at that time, when the Jewish people were in the wilderness for 40 years, what was their main job? Their main job was carrying the burden of the Mishkan, the tabernacle, from one place to another. The Mishkan, as we know, was a temporary structure, and it moved with the people as they moved through the Midbar, through the wilderness. And who carried the walls of the Mishkan, the Kelim of the Mishkan, the beams, the pillars? That was the job of the Leviim. But they also had another job, as the Torah tells us, that what was their avodah, what was their job, so to speak, in the temple? There was avodas avodah. There was work that was considered a divine service, and there was avodas masa, the work of the burden, carrying sometimes even heavy loads from one point to another, from one camp to another. What was the avodah avodah? What was the divine service? This was the music, the singing that the Levites performed when the Kohanim brought sacrifices, offerings upon the altar. And they would sing various things. And that singing defines two things: a divine service, but also something of joy. Because singing is quite close to joy. There was the burden, and there was the joy. When a person sees that these two elements are absolutely vital in life, not one or the other. There is joy, there is singing, there are moments of glory, there are moments of tremendous awareness of divine service standing in the temple and fulfilling God's instructions along those lines. But at the same time, you know, there is a Buddhist masa as well. There is a burden. Because carrying the responsibility of a heavy load is very real. And this is something that we have to remember. One of the key ingredients of how to try and take the experience of Matan Torah, the experience of Shavuot that we've gone through only last week, and to take it further so that it does become a permanent way of life, is to recognize and to involve ourselves in these two dimensions. On the one hand, joy, divine service, feeling elevated spiritually, seeing godliness and feeling godliness, but at the same time, the preparedness and commitment to carry a load. A person can often say, fulfilling God's will, listening to the Torah, doing the mitzvot, this is a huge load, and sometimes it is. But these two elements coming together, the heaviness and the joy, these are the ways, these are the ingredients of ensuring that you go forward correctly. If you take one or the other, you'll end up in an incomplete and often confusing situation. If you expect joy all the time, you won't have it. If you expect heavy loads, a burden all the time, you also won't have it. Because life as God presents it to us is a combination of these two elements. And when we do that, when we involve ourselves with a true commitment to joy, with a true commitment to carrying the burden, that's perhaps the most powerful way of ensuring that the Matan Torah, revelation at Sinai, the Shavuos experience, continues. More of that soon.
This is the Parsha HaShavua with Rabbi Mendel Lipska, only on 101.9 High FM.
We're talking about how to actually carry forward the Shavuot Matan Torah experience so that it not only becomes a moment of, well, anticipation and preparation, but you can actually take it with you after you've gone through the experience itself. And we spoke about the work of the Levites, the Leviim, and how it's a combination of recognizing the joy in life and the burden in life. And both are equally important and necessary in order to create a perfect combination of behavior that leads to perfection in one's divine service. But before that, listen to this for a moment. 56 years and going strong. The Kollel Bookshop has its annual sale from the 31st of May to the 8th of June, inclusive. Prices from 25 to 30% off virtually all stock. Buy from displayed stock at never-to-be-repeated prices. Place and pay for specials inclusive of delivery. See you from 31st May till the 8th of June at Kollel Bookshop. And also this, here at Chai FM, we want to hear from you. Chai FM is updating our Voices of Chai, and we need your voice to do it. Send us a voice note, 30 seconds or less, and tell us why you're part of the Chai FM community. What keeps you listening? What does the station mean to you? Send your voice notes to 061-895-1019. That's 061-895-1019. We can't wait to hear from you. And finally, you know, Thursdays, you've heard this many times, mean fresh magic at the family bakehouse. Golden challahs, babkas, biscuits, and cakes baked in small batches with no shortcuts. Perfect for Shabbat or the weekend. Find the family bakehouse at Genesis, Aurochs, and selected distribution centers. So we're talking about carrying the experience of Matan Torah forward, to understand how to actually combine these two seeming conflicting modes of behavior, carrying the burden, and situations of joy. But as we take a look at the Parshas Nasoh, which talks to us about a great many things, as mentioned, it begins with the counting of the Levites, the service of the Levites, the status of the Levites, etc., etc. But one of the interesting laws that is contained within this parsha is the laws of the Nazir, the Nazirite. And it's given to us in great detail. Who is this Nazirite? What is the Nazirite actually? What is it? Who is it? What does he do? And it's the individual who undertakes to somehow become a bit more holy in his life's work and in his life experience and in himself. So he undertakes, or she undertakes, a promise to behave in a particular way for at least 30 days, but it can last a year, it can last a lifetime. And there are all sorts of restrictions and prohibitions that apply to the Nazir. He can't drink any alcohol, wine, and even things like grapes or anything connected with wine. He's prohibited from drinking that. He can't cut his hair. He must let his hair grow long. He can't come into contact with a dead body. He cannot become tummy, ritually impure. All sorts of restrictions to ensure that he contains the total commitment to becoming a more spiritual person. But the sages are a little bit concerned. What motivates a person to do that? You know, after all, in their words, God has given you enough restrictions, enough prohibitions. Why must you add to it? And the sages have, well, I wouldn't say opposing views, but different views as to the psychology and need of the Nazir, of the Nazirite. On the one hand, they say, here is an individual who wants to dedicate his life to divine service, to become more spiritual, leave the somehow confusing elements of the society and world, and deny himself certain physical pleasures. He won't cut his hair, he won't drink wine, he will be careful where he goes so he doesn't come into contact with anything which is tame. And they see this as a positive step forward, as an elevation within the individual. The person wants to become higher and better, more enlightened, more refined. And therefore, by placing these restrictions upon himself, he removes himself from the physical world to a certain degree. The other view of our sages is no. Here is an individual who, unfortunately, may have failed in the challenges of life, given into temptation, behaved in a way that he shouldn't behave, and therefore, in order to avoid contact with temptation, he puts these barriers around him, these restrictions, so he doesn't get involved in the physical world, not out of a desire, really, to elevate himself, but that he shouldn't fail again. He shouldn't transgress. I have a friend who, sadly, in his youth, developed a drinking problem. And when he came to his senses, for the first couple of years, he could not be in the presence of company of people who drank, even not getting drunk, just saying l'chaim. And everybody thought he had become totally antisocial, but it wasn't being antisocial. It was a concern that if he's in the company of people who are drinking, he'll be tempted to drink as well. And if he does, he'll fall back into the pattern that he desperately wanted to leave. And so it went on for years. He's become far more comfortable with it, still not completely. But the fact is, he is an image, an example of the second analysis of the Nazarite, the individual who's afraid of being tempted because he knows, God forbid, he can fail. And if he fails, it brings about tragedy and sadness in his life. And in order to avoid that, he becomes a Nazarite. On the other hand, there is the first individual whose total desire is to elevate himself to a higher degree of spirituality. He's not worried about being tempted. He just wants no part of the so-called physical pleasures of life for a specific period of time or for life. And we've seen the story of the Nazarite in development throughout the Bible, throughout the oral law. We see both of these individuals and we understand what drives them and what motivates them. But the Torah tells us something else. Our sages tell us, who becomes the Nazarite? It refers to the portion before that deals with the sota, the unfaithful wife, the unfaithful woman, and discussing that dimension, that negativity, the immoral behavior that resulted in such family tragedy. And they say anybody who has witnessed this, anybody who has seen people fall as a result of their inability to control their temptations, he should become a Nazarite. Why? Because he can fall into the same trap as well. And we wonder why only refer to the second type. And perhaps because the second type is the more popular. Most people, all of us, are challenged by temptation from time to time, whatever it is, within the physical world. And therefore, we have to be extremely careful that create boundaries, create barriers, create fences that will protect you against negative influence. Now, of course, the sages say, don't you have enough prohibitions? Yes, we do. But a person has to be honest with their own character. Is he a strong person? Is he a weak person? Is he an individual that can stand up to the challenges of life? Is he an individual who will fail? And in fact, most people from time to time will fail. And this is why the Nazir comes right after the reading of the Sota, the unfaithful woman, to remind us that this is the physical world that we live in. And therefore, you have to know yourself well enough when to create these extra fences to protect you against the possibility of temptation. And this is, again, the way we carry forward. We carry forward the Shavuot experience. What happened at Sinai? What happened at Sinai is something extraordinary. Before Sinai, our sages tell us, there was a very clear division between the higher world and the lower worlds. And they didn't interact. The higher spiritual worlds remained just that. And the lower physical world remained just that. What happened at Sinai is that God said, now there can be an intermingling between the two. The higher worlds can come down into the physical can go up to the spiritual. There is now a synthesis, there is a harmony in all of creation. The rules of creation changed. But what happened is that the physical world was now in a state that it could be elevated. You take a piece of leather from the parchment, you make mezuzot, you make tefillin, you make the boxes that contain, you can write a Torah on parchment. And that physical object actually changes from a piece of parchment or leather into an object of holiness, with all sorts of laws applying to how to treat these holy objects. This is the world we live in. We live in a world that, if we so want, we can take elements of value, of spiritual value, and infuse them within the physical world, to change the physical, to uplift the physical. It's not always easy. It's not always, in a sense, even available. But each and every single individual can, to whatever degree, every individual can elevate a dimension of themselves and of the world around them. And this is the way you carry forward the Shavuos experience, by understanding that the Nazarite becomes the model of how to live in this world. On the one hand, there is this spiritual need of refinement, of elevation. But on the other hand, you don't overlook the physical world. It's not always the easiest thing to meet the challenges of the physical world. But you can. But you have to create boundaries and fences that say, don't cross this line because you might fail. You might fall, God forbid. And this is why this parsha of Naso always comes in close proximity to the festival of Shavuot, to emphasize again and again and again that we don't live in two opposite realities. We live in a world where opposite things are presented to us, but our power of choice is so strong that it's able to transform even a physical object, a piece of leather, a piece of parchment, the food that we eat, the work that we do. We actually transform it. That's what happened at Sinai. And when we live that type of life, when we concentrate on bringing those two together, sometimes as the Nazarite who wants spiritual awareness and refinement, and sometimes as the Nazarite who understands weakness, we understand and we know what has to be done. Because otherwise, God forbid, Shavuot can become, well, a great festival, Mount Sinai, the story of Revelation, etc., etc. But it becomes a historical event. It doesn't become a relevant, living way of life. And this is something which is important for us to understand, as mentioned by the Levites, the combination of song and burden, of joy and challenge. The story of the Nazarite, the one who lives a type of life that indicates tremendous change is possible. If we want to, put the effort into it, we can do it. More of that soon.
This is the Parsha HaShavua with Rabbi Mendel Lipska, only on 101.9 High FM.
We're talking about how to carry forward the Shavuot, the Matan Torah experience, and make it part of our daily lives throughout life. And we spoke about the interesting laws of the Nazarite, which are contained within the Parsha, within these Parsha of Naso. Although, as I said before, the Parsha contains a great many different laws, I spoke about the Nazarite because that seems to be the essence of the Parsha. And in order to underscore this view, the Haftarah that we read from the Book of Judges talks about, well, one of the great Nazarites that ever lived, Shimshon HaGibor, Samson, the warrior, the hero. Samson was a Nazarite, couldn't cut his hair, couldn't drink wine. In fact, tragically, when he did cut his hair, everything fell apart. But long before he was born, an angel, a prophet, appeared to his mother. And that's why, in fact, her name was Tzlel Panu, the one who turns to an angel, and came to her and told her that she will, in fact, have a child. She was barren. His father was Manoch, a very pious man. In fact, our sages tell us that he was more pious than all the pious people in his generation, because the time of the judges before the kings were appointed was a very turbulent time for the Jewish people. They had the Plishtim, the Philistines, on their border with harassing them and fighting with them. And the people themselves often fail to understand that the real protection against an enemy is a spiritual protection. You have to follow the will of God. And during the time of the judges, again and again, the people failed in that mission. Manoch, we are told, was a very pious man. Interesting, though, Manoch came from the tribe of Dan, and his wife, Tzlel Panu, came from the tribe of Judah. And both Judah and Dan, when they were given their blessings, which in fact gives them their identification, they referred to as lions. Judah, the lioness, and with Dan, the lion who rises. And this is something which is important for us to understand. These people were people of strength and courage, physically, but more so spiritually. And while they were, as I said before, righteous people, there was one flaw in their relationship. And that relationship was the lack of shalom bayit, of true harmony between husband and wife in the home. And what this unfortunate situation was that each one blamed the other for being childless. They had no children, desperately wanted children. And for whatever reason, the husband blamed the wife blamed the husband. And this is where the story begins, that the angel, the prophet, comes along and first tells the mother, as I said before, she was a great pious woman, first tells the mother she will have a child, to indicate to the husband that the news, the divine prophecy, came to the mother first, because perhaps he was a bit too harsh in blaming her for the lack of children. And that's where the story begins in the Haftarah that we'll read tomorrow. The story of Samson, who became a great Nazarite. But in order for him to become a Nazarite, in order for him to, in fact, come into this world and be born, the parents had to create a state of harmony and bliss within the home, between themselves. This too underscores who the Nazarite is. The Nazarite is the end result, very often, of not only holiness or a desire not to be tempted, but the end result of shalom bayit. Our sages tell us in different ways, in different places, nothing can be greater than shalom bayit. That the atmosphere created within the home by husband and wife is not only of personal immediate benefit that you live in a situation of peace and harmony, but it creates a tremendous power, a tremendous energy force of holiness in the world. The Jewish people, as I said, were constantly being attacked by this powerful army of the Plishtim, of the Philistines. And no matter what they did, they couldn't subdue them. They couldn't defend themselves properly. There was a constant state of war. And this is why they needed someone like Samson, Shimshon HaGibor, the great warrior, the great hero, who in fact goes into battle against the Philistines, against the Pelishtim. And he changes the reality of the people living in the land on their western border near the Mediterranean. These armies would constantly come and attack them. And now there is a person, Shimshon, who goes into battle again and again and again and is victorious. What brought that about? A reconciliation between husband and wife. They were both pious. They were both pious. And yet this element was disturbing between themselves and on high as well. And when rectified, it brings about a savior, one who defends the people and brings peace to the land. What's interesting to note is that I said before his mother came from the prophet of Judah. His father came from the prophet of Dan. Judah was the first tribe when the Jewish people marched through the wilderness. They were at the front. Dan were all the way in the back. And they would pick up what people had lost. But they were all the way in the back to tell us that this is not only a story that happened once upon a time to a specific individual, both of them being extremely individual, being extremely pious, but from the first to the last, every one of us can take a lesson in life from this, from these people, and from the end result of their positive choices and behavior. And not only the incredible interaction they had with the angel, with the prophet, but in fact bringing about peace in the land. So when you're in shul tomorrow, listen to the parsha. Fascinating reading. And as I always say, there'll be something there that resonates. And when it does, it will bring you clarity in something that you need in life. But listen carefully. At the same time, listen to the Haftarah. It's a fascinating story. It doesn't tell the whole story of Samson. In fact, it tells very little about his life, which comes later in the book of Judges. But there, too, you will hear something that speaks to you, something that resonates with your heart, with your mind, with your soul. Listen to it carefully. Parsha Naso. It's a parsha that teaches us how we can carry forward the entire experience of Shavuot and Matan Torah and make it our lives. Shabbat Shalom. Good Shabbos.